The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The FA Cup, and it's left to Chelsea to try and spring a shock. Three places and 1 point below Manchester United. If they don't win, then the higher placed team will have made it to the quarterfinal from every game in the fifth round. Speaking of shocks, Sergio Ramos was sent off for Real Madrid this weekend for just the 25th time in his career. A surprise defeat for Real. We'll get the latest from Spain and the rest of Europe. We'll round up the Football League, look ahead to the Champions League this week, and tell you about a game that was goalless after 90 minutes and finished 2-2. All that on today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
You're in a hoodie.
I am, yes.
So am I.
Great.
Does that make us cool?
Probably not.
Faye, does that make us cool? Faye
Carruthers. I'm also in a hoodie.
You are. Wow, this is a sort of midlife crisis that we've all entered.
Don't loop me into that.
Is that unfair?
Quarter life crisis, maybe.
That's the voice of journalist and author James Montague, pod debut. Hi, James.
How are you doing?
Very good. You're based in Belgrade. What are you doing here?
I am. I'm here. I'm talking at a thing tonight. Does this come out on Monday?
Yes.
It does.
Well, so I hope it depends on how boozy a lunch producer Jonathan takes.
Well, assuming that he's on the calibre, then yeah, I'm talking at a thing at The Social tonight in central London called Great Football Adventures, which is people getting together and talking about kind of interesting places they've gone around the world.
And what will you be talking about?
I'll be talking about Iran. I went to, before the World Cup, I spent a bit of time in Iran and I met a lot of the women who are protesting about the fact that women are banned from going into football stadiums there. So talking about meeting them and the fact that they've got this beautiful football culture as well. On top of that, I mean, that's one of the main issues there. But you get 100,000 people there at the Tehran Derby. It's like, and none of us would ever know. We won't ever see it on television. It's almost really difficult for us to go into the country. So it's this little piece of, you think you know everything about football in the world, and yet you've got this incredible, massive, vibrant derby that you'll never get to.
I'm certain I don't know everything about football in the world. The listeners will certainly attest to that. What is the Iran derby? Who's, you know, Tehran United versus
Persepolis versus Esteghlal.
Okay.
So it's kind of red and blue in the city. And it's, yes, it's a, it was, I got there about 6 hours before kickoff and it was completely full. So it was amazing, but it was 100% men because women are banned. So Gianni Infantino turned up because he was visiting Iran that day, and you could see him in quite clearly in the crowd because he's got quite a strong look, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And then outside, it turned out there were 30 female activists who were all getting arrested for trying to get into the game. A lot of them were dressed as men to try to get past the security. And it was really depressing because Infantino didn't want to say anything about it, didn't bring it up.
There's a shock.
Yeah, well, you know.
Here's a question from James. Is that, how are you even going to be able to talk about this weekend for an hour? The deadest weekend of football I can remember, even including international breaks for a long time. Barry, thanks for your time, James, Faye and Barry. We'll be back on Thursday. Don't mind. Do you subscribe to that notion?
I can certainly understand it. I think you didn't particularly immerse yourself in football this weekend. I've seen other people compare it to an international break. I quite enjoyed the football I saw. Mm. I was looking forward to Newport against Man City, and it was a good game. I was looking forward to Millwall, Wimbledon. That wasn't televised, but you know, the highlights, it was okay. But yeah,
it's a very oversimplistic approach to say there's no Premier League on, so therefore football is bad.
There is lots of life outside the Premier League, and that is a bit of a narrow, blinkered view, you know, but I suppose the majority of our listeners are interested in the Premier League above all else. But, you know, there's lots of action going on below that in the pyramid, and the cup ties were all right, particularly surprising.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it. We'll start with Newport Man City, because, Faye, that was on paper and on a boggy pitch. You know, it had all the ingredients we wanted. And Newport held City for long enough to make you start thinking, oh, you never know.
Yeah, 51 minutes, I think it was, that they held them for. So it kept everybody excited, certainly. I think a lot of people really wanted it to beat the horrendous weather conditions that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, didn't they, to see how City would have fared. And, you know, apart from that Edison, fantastic save from Edison with the header from Newport, they could have gone ahead. It would have been amazing. But, you know, at the end, City's quality shone through.
It did. And there is that sort of deflating moment as soon as City scored, James, where you're like, oh, well, that's it then. But fair play to Newport. They did, I reckon if they could have held it at 2-1 for more than 5 seconds, there could have been like a corner in the last minute and the keeper coming up.
Well, I love these. I mean, like I was saying earlier, I'm not often in the UK when an FA Cup weekend is on. So I loved it. I loved being back. And it was on football on terrestrial television. It was amazing. And Newport, well, that was the game I watched. And the first half, I thought, what's amazing is you have the most expensive assembled squad in history in Manchester City. And even, you'd say it's a second 11, you still had Sane playing, you still had Edison in goal, you still had Jesus up from Mahrez, you know, probably what, that's 140 million people, £140 million. And that's the first half. You couldn't really have put much between them. But still, even with this coach in Pep Guardiola, people haven't worked out how to deal with being delapped. It was amazing. It was like a long throw. And it was just chaos every time this guy got the long throw in. So it was a shame what happened in the end. But I guess we tune into those games for two reasons. One is to hopefully an upset. Don't like it, Upham. The other one is to see, you know, a 25-0 shellacking, which we had in Italy. 20-0
Italy.
We'll come to that in a bit. But, you know, it was, yes, there were no shocks, but there were lots of great games. The Swansea game was brilliant. I thought that was great entertainment. Mm. And so I wasn't as disillusioned with the FA Cup as perhaps every other person in this room was.
Barry, Phil Foden's quite good, isn't he? Doesn't get a lot of game time, scored a couple of decent goals here.
Yeah, he was the standout player on the pitch, I thought. He's clearly good enough to play for City. But you can also see why he doesn't get too many minutes on the pitch, because who's he going to replace? You know, David Silva's ahead of him in the pecking order. Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo, Silva. And as an 18-year-old, are you going to risk him in a Premier League title chase? You probably could, but you can see why he doesn't get picked. And I suppose he's signed a long-term contract. He's probably happy enough there for the time being, but I would imagine if he doesn't start getting picked with greater frequency, he might agitate for a move elsewhere. But, you know, what a place to get your education. And so he's in a win-win situation, you have to say.
You know, he'll get there eventually. I guess he might look at Sancho and think, could be in the England squad, but maybe he's just very patient. In an impatient world.
Well, he's certainly achieved a lot more at the age of 18 than I did. I'll give him that.
I'd like on the Newport goal scorer, Paddy Ammon, right? He's so Irish, he makes you sound like Jacob Rees-Mogg.
He got a great goal, and hats off to him. He scored in all five rounds Newport played in. You know, that's a huge day for him. I mean, on Match of the Day, they suggested that Newport gave City too much respect, that they weren't as aggressive as they had been against Middlesbrough. But I think if they had tried that, they could have been absolutely slaughtered. And the fact of the matter is, they should have gone ahead. It was 2-1 with not very long to go, and I think they couldn't have done it better, to be honest. And you know, ultimately, class told. Like, but that's a team that was assembled for, I think, about 50 grand.
Mm. Mm. In a non-patronising way, they did themselves proud.
They did, didn't they? You mentioned Swansea-Brentford. It was a good game. And Daniel James is the man who's getting the headlines. I mean, he won the free kick, which led to Swansea's first goal. He scored an incredible second goal where he's faster than Kylian Mbappe, basically. Then his pace forced a straight red card for Brentford. Born in Yorkshire, his dad is Welsh. He's played 58 minutes in a friendly for Wales. So, you know, in a Declan Rice way, Gareth Southgate could pick up the phone pretty sharpish.
I think he was in the squad for the against Serbia in recent World Cup qualifiers, I think. But he was absolutely fantastic. It was like watching Mbappe or kind of 98-era Michael Owen. It was incredible. Like watching him, it's so far ahead of everybody else in terms of pace. He seemed to have good game sense. He made great decisions. He knew how to draw fouls out of people. I thought he was... Well, I mean, I also don't think he was the man of the match. I think Bersin Celina was the Kosovan international who's kind of led a bit of a nomadic... I mean, I think earlier you called him a Man City reject, which I guess he probably was. But one of them...
Did you? Barry looks confused.
No. Maybe that's on the private message group, I don't know.
I've never heard of him.
Take the credit, Maz.
you've been a big fan of his for a long while. But he's from City. And we were talking about Phil Foden earlier and about how difficult it is for those young players who are often hoarded by in these academies to break through. And often they're not really taken seriously until they go and play for a kind of a smaller side, are playing 90 minutes week in, week out. Again, Declan Rice being a case in point here, someone who probably will be signed by a top four side very, very shortly. But he's kind of had this nomadic existence and was at Ipswich and now he's at Swansea. And he looked really superb. And I think he might be a teenager still, although I don't know what the definition of a teenager is. So don't listen to a word I say. But he looked really, a player that Swansea have really been missing for a few years. So it was, and it's great to see Graham Potter doing well there as well.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of what we hear about Swansea and how they're being run at the moment is that it's not all sweetness and light there, Faye.
Yeah, without going too much in detail. It's not all sweetness and light at Swansea at the moment. And so to see them go through in these circumstances, it is great. I did see John Bruin actually liken Daniel James to Andrei Kanchelskis, but I don't think he quite has the arm movements going on that Kanchelskis did.
No, I thought the sort of Owen 98.
Yeah, little scrap of a, just weaving in and out. You can see that, you know.
But they're lucky to have him because he was all but gone to Leeds on deadline day.
He was at the ground. He was there. It was at Elland Road. And
Leeds or Swansea decided, I think it was to avoid fan mutiny, they just stopped answering the phone. Their fax machine mysteriously broke down. So he would have had every right to throw his rattle out of the pram, but he's behaving professionally. But yeah, Swansea is a mess at the moment. Hugh Jenkins has left. Their American owners are selling all their best players. I think they sold four during the window or on deadline day. Brought nobody in. They've had two disastrous windows in a row. And Graham Potter is really working with one and a half arms tied behind his back and doing a fantastic job under the circumstances. He's brought a lot of kids through. They're all playing well, but the worry for Swansea fans now is that they're playing so well, they'll all be sold in summer.
This could also, the fact that this wasn't a massive shock. I mean, when the owners came in, it was a very well-run club. It had a huge fan ownership kind of portion. They were listened to, and all of that was thrown out the window. It was all predicted, and it's all come to pass. They've got relegated, and if Graham Potter does get them up, then it's no help from the owners whatsoever.
Well, it seems unlikely they've an outside shot of making the playoffs, but I just don't think they have the players to do it. But I would imagine Graham Potter will be in big demand in the summer.
I remember Palace being third from bottom in January and then getting to the playoff final and beating West Ham. So in the Championship, it's
anything is possible.
Anything can happen.
I'd just like to point out George Byers' goal, because the greatest skill in football is the side foot pass. And to just pick a corner from 25 yards and not even kick the ball that hard, just say, well, I'll just put it there. Lovely, lovely goal. AFC Wimbledon 0, Millwall 1. Wimbledon had a chance, didn't they, Faye? Before Murray Wallace's goal in the fifth minute, Joe Pickett hit the post. And that could have changed everything.
It could have changed everything. I was really gutted for Wimbledon, actually. I really wanted them to go through. No disrespect to Millwall at all. I think a lot of people would have liked to see it. Proper old school battle going on.
Laurie Sanchez would have wanted to get some interview time, wouldn't he, as they progressed?
And it was a shame that they're not. I mean, the whole weekend, really, I'm a little bit disappointed because there's no one really to get excited about.
Mm. But you say that, it makes the quarterfinals potentially more interesting, doesn't it? Or doesn't it?
No, because you don't really have an underdog to root for. The underdog to root for is Millwall.
Well, yeah, so they instantly, you go from being the other side of the fairy tale to the fairy tale. You know, Millwall, whoever they draw, unless it's Swansea, I guess, they become the, could plucky Millwall do it. And Millwall have a good record in the FA Cup, don't they? Beaten finalists 2004, the third time in 7 years they've got to the quarterfinals. So we now have to support Millwall, Barry.
Oh, I happily support Millwall. I have a bit of a soft spot for Millwall. I enjoy going to the Den. It has a reputation I think it doesn't deserve.
I agree.
There is, admittedly, a sizable minority of supporters who can't behave themselves, but the club works very hard to try and eliminate the problem. Their work in the community is well known, and Neil Harris is a very good manager who's punching above his weight. I think Millwall are you know, a League One side that are playing in the Championship. So I would happily get behind them. I don't think Wimbledon did themselves justice in that game. They were outstanding against West Ham, but in this, they, you know, they were getting forward and crossing the ball into an empty box. And I was at their press day on Thursday, and Wally Downs gave was chatting, and he said. You know, he was expecting an attritional game, and if a game of football happened to break out somewhere along the line, that would be a bonus for the spectators who were there. I don't think it was as attritional as he would have liked, and they gave away a soft goal, and that was an opportunity lost for them.
AFC Wimbledon, bottom of League One, 7 points from safety. A classic case of if only they played as well in the league as they do in the cup, and they'd be fine. James, did you want to add something?
Just that Millwall, probably the most popular football club in Serbia. Everybody seems to be a Millwall fan, yeah. Largely because of Only Fools and Horses. Everyone loves Only Fools and Horses. But I don't think it was ever said that Del Boy was a Millwall fan. I think it was alluded to. I looked into it. But they love... I'll talk to people and they'll show me their screensaver and it'll be Millwall.
Where's Norman Wisdom famous? Albania.
Albania, he is okay. Really famous. They've got a statue for him in Tirana. Okay. It was great... watch the Wimbledon West Ham game. Wimbledon were absolutely fantastic, but we almost had the Football Factory life imitating art of is it the Football Factory where West Ham get Millwall in the cup and everybody gets that's the central kind of narrative of the film. We almost had that. We almost had the Football Factory kind of derby.
Probably lucky we didn't.
Yeah, I mean I remember going watching West Ham Millwall back in the day, like in the early 90s, and it was some of the most I've reported from war zones, and I can tell you that it's probably some of the most militarised football matches I've ever seen in my life.
Let's do a quick roundup of Premier League teams who knocked out Football League opposition. QPR 0, Watford 1, Brighton 2, Derby 1, and Bristol City 0, Wolves 1. Faye, you were at Loftus Road.
I was.
Did you have a nice time?
I did. I got frustrated with QPR, as every time I've been to Loftus Road this season, I have been frustrated with QPR. They promise so much and deliver little a lot of the time, and Watford really didn't deserve to go through. I think the Watford fans would agree with that as well. Etienne Capoue with the winner, but they Tony Leisner, the QPR defender, missed an absolute sitter right at the end that would have taken it to extra time. Heads in hands, absolutely everywhere. I would have said on the day QPR deserved it, but if you're not going to take your chances, you're not going to go through.
Mm. As someone who loves Aurelio Gomez, tricky now, he's a big fan of Bolsonaro, the new Prime Minister of Brazil. Should I change my opinion of who I think he's such a smiley man? And he looks like the world's smallest man, despite being quite tall.
He gives very different reasons as to why he's done that. I think it's more that there is nobody else to vote for. It's very interesting to listen to his reasons for it before you immediately judge, as most of us probably would do. Mm-hmm. And I actually interviewed him after the game. It was his 38th birthday. He's still
38? God, 38? He looks about 60.
He doesn't fly around like he's 60, though, I tell you. He was throwing himself all over the place. Obviously not played in the Premier League this season because of Foster's fantastic form. But Gomez may retire at the end of the season. He said he's 99% sure. He's got a bit of a wobble as to whether to actually do it or not. I think Javi Gracia may convince him.
Brighton 2, Derby 1. Lovely finish from Anthony Knockhart. Ashley Cole has seven winners' medals in this competition. That was his first ever goal in the FA Cup. I think he's won more FA Cups. There's only four football teams that have won more FA Cups than Ashley Cole. but he's out. And Brighton make the quarterfinals for the second year in a row. They lost 2-0 to Manchester United last season, but their only wins in 2019 have been in the FA Cup, James. So you wonder if this is a distraction for Brighton.
Maybe, but I think it's all about their home form, isn't it? I mean, they've been marvellous at home and they've got a terrible away record. But again, another of these teams that have come into the Premier League, and they've learned how to stay above the bottom three. You know, it's quite a poor quality league, I think, in the past couple of years, if you look at it in comparison to other leagues. And if you look at how many, the top three just running away with it, Brighton are going to, you think they're going to stay up, I think.
Do you think that, Barry?
They probably have enough about them to stay up, but mainly because, as James said, there are so many
they're three bad teams. They're terrible teams.
They're
I always think it's quite an achievement to be one of the three worst teams in the Premier League, because at least 10 of them are awful.
Bristol City 0, Wolves 1. Good game here. Bristol City made 5 changes. Obviously, they're in the playoff. They're in the playoffs in the Championship on a brilliant run. 15 games unbeaten before this. Matt Doherty was sort of the star for Wolves, and he's been brilliant this season. Matt,
he's been great. I mean, he's played so far forward. And you know, you almost see him as a continental fullback, and he plays, and he's also got a magnificent beard. If you know, he's got like this beautiful red beard that he has.
I haven't noticed
beard envy of him very much.
Yeah. Yours is it's a bit
scrappy
fair, yours,
mess.
It would have been a lovely goal as well if he'd have scored it, one that hit the post, the back heel from Jimenez, lovely.
But I mean, I wonder.
And yes, he couldn't get in the Ireland team quite recently, which
is unbelievable,
absolutely just incredible.
Sort of, I'm trying to think if there's a better attacking right back, where he is in the attacking right backs in the Premier League. Would you
probably not? I mean, you think he's
Kyle Walker, obviously,
but Kyle Walker's had inconsistent minutes. I mean, Doherty's pretty much, I mean, Wolves don't keep a lot of clean sheets, but his attacking threat is absolutely superb.
Alexander Arnold, you'd obviously age wise as well, you'd take Alexander Arnold, but he's up there,
definitely.
There was lots of fun at the end, wasn't there, when the Bristol City keeper came up, had a volley,
so close as well.
He hit it straight at John Ruddy. But it is the magnetism of goalkeepers when they're attacking a corner is brilliant. The ball always, or maybe in my mind, it always seems to end up at their feet or they're involved.
I think it's because you're looking at them, because they're obviously in a different coloured shirt, you're watching them having legged it up the pitch. So yeah.
But I'm looking at them and the ball goes to them. I mean, maybe I'm just looking at them, and when the ball doesn't go, I believe they're kind of close to it. It's possible. Palace also, I forgot to mention them. They won 2-0 at Doncaster. The highlight of which was Paul Downing of Doncaster, where a ball was crossed in and he was sort of sliding but handled it, and then did some excellent lying by just holding his face.
Oh yeah, the
and
great
pretending the ball had slammed into his head when it absolutely hadn't.
He won this week's Rivaldo Award for fakery, wasn't it?
Exactly right, or the Stephen Taylor Award, as I like to call it. So Palace are through as well. Well done to them. Well, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll begin by looking ahead to Chelsea versus Manchester United.
It's time to focus.
Well, I think that Democrats are going to have to contend with the fact that everything is about Donald Trump.
Today in Focus is the new daily podcast from The Guardian. Join me, Anushka Astana, for the best stories from our journalists around the world. Subscribe now to Today in Focus from The Guardian.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. On the 15th of March, it's all been announced now, Barry, the lineup at a place called Earth. Amazing, Earth. In Hackney, me, you, Bukowski, Squires.
Ooh.
Very good for the live show. How many tickets have we sold, Jonathan? Not many tickets left, apparently. They are flying off the shelves. So, come along and we'll have a nice time. Manchester United go to Stamford Bridge tonight in the FA Cup, the tie of the round. For those of you who listen to the pod before that game happens, so how excited are you, Barry, about this?
I'm looking forward to it. It'll be interesting. You know, how each team will approach the game. I suppose we know how Chelsea will approach the game because their manager is so cemented in his views. But I think they're going to have to do something special to beat Manchester United. And it's a very important game for both managers because Maurizio Sarri is obviously teetering on the brink of dismissal possibly, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is auditioning for the job of Manchester United on a full-time basis.
Slightly easier that Martial and Lingard aren't playing for Manchester United. That makes a big difference to how they set up, Faye.
Yeah, makes a difference, definitely. I think that they'll be missing a bit of pace, United, which potentially helps Chelsea out a little bit. But as Barry was saying, because Sarri is so stubborn, he's unlikely to do anything other than a 4-3-3. But how funny would it be if he did something totally different and just shocked everybody? It would be great, because he needs to. You know, Kante needs to be back in that role. Put Jorginho on the bench. It's frustrating. I've spoken to so many Chelsea fans who are incredibly disheartened by the way Sarri is refusing and keeping digging his heels in. I'm looking forward to it because I said the last time I was on the pod was when Arsenal were playing Manchester United and I said, I don't care. And then it was actually a brilliant game. So now I'm really excited about this one. I'm hoping it's going to be a good game. But I think Manchester United will be stronger.
It could be. I mean, we could see Sarri lose his job. I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. I mean, it's interesting that, I mean, there seems to be a bit of chaos behind the scenes at Chelsea as well, which a lot of people don't really talk about. I mean, they talk about Sarri and the fact, like, how's he formation wise? Is he playing Kante in the right place? But you got behind the scenes, where's the owner? Where are all the people who are kind of running the club? And the owner's not even allowed really to come in and work in the country. I mean, Abramovich is now an Israeli citizen and he's kind of persona non grata here. So it's, I mean, who's going to do the firing? I mean, Abramovich isn't going to be there to watch it. So who's in charge of the club? Who's running things?
It's his right hand woman, Marina
Granovskaya.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, she's his consigliere, but, I mean, it's not the same as having the owner there or the person who's in charge there. She's been given a lot of responsibility, but it still seems to me that there is a lot going on at Chelsea that we don't know about and will almost certainly have some kind of bearing on what's happening on the pitch.
Mm. Be very upsetting to be sacked by the henchman and not by the evil dictator, won't it?
The stats are in Chelsea's favour, though. I think of the 22 games that they've played each other at Stamford Bridge, Manchester United have only won 2 out of those.
Ooh.
Will Alexis Sanchez start for Manchester United, do we think?
No.
Okay.
It's a shame it doesn't really matter anymore. What a decline. It's a real sad story, really, because it can't be age.
It could be.
He's not that old.
But he's played, we discussed this the other week, he's played a lot of football.
Yeah. It's like the Rooney principle that you've, like, if you put so many hours, you've only got so many hours that your body can handle.
Exactly, yeah. So, one of Chelsea United will join Wolves, Millwall, City, Brighton, Watford, Palace and Swansea in the quarterfinals, or the sixth round proper. Only 2 of the top 6 in the Premier League, none of the bottom 6, and Millwall and Swansea, the last non-Premier League sides in the competition. The draw is after the game tonight, so not on the one show, which is fantastic news for all of us. And fantastic news for the Glazers, possibly, which is nice, and Manchester United fans, is that they might get a lovely new owner in Saudi Arabia. A £3.8 billion takeover bid from Prince Mohammed bin Salman. This has been rumoured before, hasn't it, James?
And it is, and you've got to take everything with a pinch of salt. I mean, The Sun reported on it over the weekend. There was no quotes in it. There's been all sorts of connections between the Glazers going to Saudi Arabia. You have to remember that, I mean, Mohammed bin Salman, otherwise known as Mohammed bin Bonesaw. I mean, this is a guy who, we talk about human rights, we talk about kind of very bad people being involved in football. This is probably the worst person you could have buying your football club, if indeed they do want to buy their football club. And even if it's a sovereign wealth fund that wants to buy Manchester United, this is all part of Mohammed bin Salman's kind of Vision 2030 scheme, where he wants to diversify the economy and bring, you know, try to improve the image of Saudi Arabia through sports and hosting sports events. And even, I mean, taking over FIFA effectively. I mean, it's this $25 billion deal that Infantino is trying to ram through FIFA that would have a new kind of international club World Cup, which would take on the Champions League. You know, this is all being driven by the Saudi leadership with the Crown Prince at the head of it. And this is a compromised man. And if it's allowed to happen, I think any talk of kind of, like, this has occasionally come up with Thaksin Shinawatra at Manchester City. It's come up occasionally with Abramovich at Chelsea. It's thoroughly, thoroughly depressing.
Bin Salman's media minister today says reports claiming that HRH, the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, intends on buying Manchester United are completely false.
Yeah, well, a cynic could argue that that's maybe just running the ID up the flagpole to see what the reaction is. It would be awful if he got his hands on Manchester United, but it would be amusing up to a point just to see various Manchester United fans tying themselves in knots, I mean, trying to defend their new owner.
Man City fans have tied themselves in knots trying to defend their ownership.
This is the whataboutism online. It's incredible watching City fans tie themselves up trying to justify, you know, the fact that they're owned by one of the most powerful people in Abu Dhabi, in the United Arab Emirates, terrible human rights record, that the kind of mental gymnastics to get, well, you've had Manchester United fans have got like a sponsorship deal with Saudi Telecom, you know, so that means you're as bad as us. And this is, I mean, something that is kind of frequently cited about the poison on Twitter that we see. Now, we can't really have a kind of, I mean, if you could ever had a decent debate, but I kind of agree with Barry. I mean, it's such a dark story, and this character, Mohamed Salman, is such a dark kind of person to be involved in your football club that it's difficult to see the humour in any of it. But seeing how immediately from the moment that takes place, if it took place, if indeed it's even planned, that immediately Manchester United fans online will switch to being completely in favour of it. And it's just what you've got to do to compete, right? I mean, it's all bad money, right? It's all dirty money, so...
Well, it was interesting that Barney Ronay did a piece on Saturday about sport washing and had the sort of the Champions League draw, actually who's playing who, you know. And it is... What's very difficult for football fans is to separate... Or can you separate? You know, Can you watch the art of an artist who turns out to be a terrible human, or watch a film of someone who turns out to be a terrible person? And what are you meant to do as a fan? Can we appreciate the football that City play, but be aware of their ownership, or should we not?
I think it should always be an asterisk. If you're not a City fan, it should always be an asterisk next to that when you're watching it. Yes, you're watching a beautiful team, but if the money that's being generated to buy those players is from a system of indentured slavery, which essentially they have in the UAE and the rest of the Gulf, with this kafala system, which has been really highlighted through the World Cup and Qatar, then you cannot, in the same way if you wanted to buy a diamond ring, but it was made by children dying in a Congolese kind of diamond mine, you'd be like, oh yeah, I can appreciate the beauty of the diamond, but you probably wouldn't want to buy it. You want to be associated with that trade.
But I think it's okay to support a team, but you can still abhor certain things the club does. You know, Sunderland's behaviour over the Adam Johnson situation was despicable, absolutely shameful. And, you know, I still want Sunderland to do well. I'm sure Jonathan Wilson would acknowledge the same.
But this is it, and this is this equalisation of badness, which actually that's a terrible phrase. But like, imagine this, like, oh, look at the Glazers, look what they've done in the leverage buyout of Manchester United. They're bad people. I think there's a point where you say that the villainy that the owner is involved in is so bad that you have to walk away and you do not support your club, or you campaign to have them removed, or campaign to stop them coming to your club. I think Manchester City and the ownership there is a very close thing. This level, if Mohammed bin Salman takes over, this isn't some kind of unknown royal family member who may or may not have the money because he loves football, but nobody really knows who he is. He has a long bloody trail behind him, and this, to be honest, if this does go through, then I think this is a watershed moment where nothing ever matters again in football about who owns football clubs. I think. Sorry, is that depressing?
It's quite depressing, and you know, to move from that to the Europa League doesn't seem quite right. But it's what we'll do. Chelsea obviously play United tonight. They beat Malmo 2-1 in the Europa League on Thursday. A pretty good side out. They did okay. The bigger story was Arsenal's defeat in Bate Borisov. Amy Lawrence writing, what on earth have Arsenal become? Or what are they trying to even become? These questions cut raggedly through the cold air as Unai Emery's strange team toiled against Belarusian opponents who've been on a winter break and not played a competitive match for 9 weeks.
But they're not mugs, are they? I mean, they've got a long Champions League pedigree. I mean, they've got a lot of money behind them. Pretty successful team.
Mm-hmm. Game they played since the middle of December, though.
Oh, well rested.
So we're not. This is not crisis for Arsenal.
I don't know. I mean, it just seems that this crisis narrative around Arsenal has just been going on and on and on again, and it's just tiring, really. I mean, first it was Wenger, now it's Emery, and then it's going to be Kroenke again and Usmanov, and then.
More fun was that Alexander Chleb and his teammates went to Burger King to celebrate. There's a big picture of them eating.
I'm disappointed by that, to be honest, because I've had this streak of seeing footballers after winning games going to celebrate with a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Right.
So I'd assume that was the meal of choice, because, I mean, a Burger King doesn't sound like it has any nutritional value for it.
At least we've balanced things up, because Lance was talking about McDonald's the other week.
It's true.
Kind of now,
and we're just looking for sponsorship from a giant conglomerate. you know, anyone, Burger King, Minos, Gazprom will take it.
Saudi Telecom, I mean, yeah. they've got some money around them.
There is, you know, there's pickles and salad in a Whopper. That's nutritional, isn't that, you know.
Water, you can have water if you're there.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think I've eaten Burger King in my adult life.
In the advert for, in the adverts before Lego 2 was an advert for a Happy Meal, and now they have little apples and grapes in the Happy Meal. So there you go. Celtic lost 2-0 at home to Valencia. Denis Cheryshev, he of the lovely left-footed goals in the World Cup, and Ruben Sobrino with the goals. And you are going to Dynamo Kiev Olympiacos, James.
I am. I'm going on Thursday.
Finally balanced at 2-2.
It's going to be quite a good game. The Olympiacos, the Greek football is quite interesting at the moment because you've got the traditional dominance of Olympiacos being challenged by Pauk Thessaloniki and Ivan Savvidis, their owner, who you probably recognised as the man with a gun when he came on the pitch.
Oh, yes.
So that's all going off in Greek football.
Well, hopefully not going off.
Well, or not going off, but it should be. I'm not sure. I'm leaving for Ukraine tomorrow, so I haven't checked the weather, which is, I think, probably quite a stupid thing to have done. So it'd be,
do you have a coat?
I have a coat. Good. But I think it might be kind of like minus 10, so. But lots of fans. It should be pretty, like I said, finely poised. It should be quite exciting. Exciting game. Good atmosphere.
All right. Well, enjoy it. Now onto the news over the Emiliano Sala transfer. Last week we reported that Nantes had asked for some of the money from Cardiff. Since then, more news has come out about Cardiff perhaps trying to avoid paying some of that transfer fee. Let's talk to Nick Harris at Sporting Intel on Twitter for more on it. Thanks for coming on, Nick.
Pleasure.
So, as I said, we reported on Nantes asking for some of the money, and that was actually Cardiff. That story came from Cardiff City.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that the line was sort of Cardiff saying, putting out there that it seemed unreasonable for Nantes to want the money at this very sensitive time.
And so what have Cardiff City done since then? They're now approaching other Premier League clubs to see if there was interest from other clubs in Salah to try and avoid paying some of the transfer fee?
Yeah, that's the story that we had this weekend. So we found out that these letters, a number of letters, had been sent by Cardiff's lawyers to fellow Premier League clubs who had been linked before the player joined Cardiff to those clubs, seeking their help in what they described as their legal case against Nantes and wanting the other clubs to share their knowledge of Salah. Effectively, what they wanted to do was get information which would help them pay less or perhaps pay nothing of the fee that they owe for Salah, which a lot of people might find distasteful, and others, particularly Cardiff fans, will think is a normal thing to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can run through sort of, you know, the facts of the matter. The fact is the agreed transfer fee was £15 million. All transfers involve people trying to inflate and deflate prices as suits them. The fact is that the first tranche of £5 million, was due, you know, in the last week of January. Again, that's not disputed. That's a fact, the £5 million. And the fact is it hasn't been paid. I think we can also pretty safely assume that if we had a sliding doors reality where that plane hadn't tragically crashed and that Salah had made his debut at Arsenal on Tuesday, the 29th of January, none of this would be an issue. Nobody would be trying not to pay. So the issue is Cardiff are exploring ways in which they can not pay the fee or pay as little of it as possible. And certainly the story over the weekend was revealing that they'd written to fellow Premier League clubs to get information that they think will help them make a case not to pay. But it's obviously very complex. And unfortunately, all the joy that football brings us, when we actually get to the underbelly of how it works, it can also be bloody depressing.
Mm. Yeah, that is true. There is this transfer has shown a sort of a window on how murky transfer business dealings can be. And is it fair to say we all sort of knew that, but we never really want to acknowledge it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we only need to look at the amount of, frankly, unsatisfactory investigations, inquiries, court cases involving transfers, allegedly dodgy transfers, dodgy dealings, dodgy agents. It's a matter of record how much money agents now take out of the game. It's a matter of record that, you know, you've got managers and agents with relationships that might look as if they have conflicts of interest across the game. I'm talking in the broadest sense now. We know that clubs, you know, and agents are perhaps not always as clear as they can be with the truth So yeah, we knew. I think we knew that football's a bit of a murky business, but this tragedy has really, really lifted the lid on quite how murky it can be. And it was reported in the French media, an email that agent Willie Mackay had sent to Salah, where he actually told Salah that he'd deliberately inflated the price that Cardiff would pay for the player by pretending other clubs were interested. So, you know, this isn't speculation. We know this murky behaviour goes on, and this tragedy has really just shone a light into areas, things that we knew that were happened in football, but you know, now are confirmed in the grubbiest possible way, do happen.
Nick, you say it's very complex, but is it? Because a contract was signed and the money is owed. You know, without wanting to reduce this tragedy to really simplistic terms, but if I buy a laptop in PC World and then drop it in the car park and it smashes, I don't expect to not have to pay for it.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you, Barry. I think it is absolutely clear cut. I mean, to use your analogy, what would happen is if you'd taken out the appropriate insurance on your laptop that you dropped in the car park, it would then be up to you, having paid PC World the fee, to try and get that money back on your insurance or whatever. But yeah, of course you would have paid PC World because you owe them for the laptop. It would seem to all of us, laymen and a lot of legal experts alike, that this is really clear cut. Cardiff should have paid by now the first £5 million of the transfer fee, and they haven't. And it seems pretty clear cut that they are trying to explore all kinds of avenues not to pay that money, which again, Cardiff fans will argue that's legitimate and are arguing to me this weekend amongst the normal abuse that it's understandable Cardiff are doing what they're doing. Others of us might think that the behaviour is tawdry, but I agree with you. It seems pretty clear cut.
Nick, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Nick Harris there at Sporting Intel on Twitter. Cardiff have said they will do the right thing, but have indicated they first want full facts disclosed about what happened and the involvement of agents with Nantes in the deal. To the Football League now. Norwich City back on top of the Championship after a 4-0 win at second bottom Bolton. Two more for Farmer. Teemu Pukki, two great finishes. He's now scored six games in a row. The Canaries also missed a penalty. Two for Gary Medine in Sheffield United's 4-0 demolition of fourth bottom Reading. Some grade Z defending on Reading's part for one of the goals. Sheffield United move into the promotion places above Leeds, who didn't play. Hal Robson-Kanu scored a great looping header. Jay Rodriguez banged one in from the edge of the box to give West Brom a 2-0 win away at Villa. They're fourth, 4 points behind Leeds and Sheffield United. And lots of fun at Rotherham, or pain for Rotherham fans. Dominic Iorfa's equaliser in Sheffield Wednesday's 2-2 draw there was the second latest goal of the Championship season, officially timed at 99 minutes and 10 seconds. According to a lot of Rotherham fans, they just knew at some point it was going to happen. They're really struggling. League One. Faye, yet another win for filthy, dirty Luton.
I knew you had to talk about this. There was no avoiding it at all.
A record 20 games unbeaten now.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm still, as a Luton fan, trying not to get too excited. I've seen it go wrong before, but this is a really special Luton team, and particularly under Mick Harford, who's one of my favourite people. It's brilliant.
Is Big Mick going to ever take the job?
I don't think he will at the end of the season. He's got it till the end of the season now.
Okay.
I don't think he wants it. He was quite happy being head of recruitment, but it gives us then an opportunity. I mean, if we did get promoted, mm-hmm. the calibre of candidates that are going to be coming, going to want to come to Kenilworth Road will be higher. Don't give me that look.
Still have to be near Luton, wouldn't they?
Give me that look. Unbelievable. But, you know, the most heartening thing is we are, I'm just trying to add it up actually, 11 points.
Yeah. 6 points clear of Barnsley in second. They beat Wickham. 11 points clear of third place Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Portsmouth, the 3-0 up at Southend after half an hour.
I watched that game.
Did you?
It was comically... It was a bit of Rotherham-esque, actually. As soon as Southend, Portsmouth was 3-0 up, Southend pulled one back, and you just knew, because Portsmouth, they were doing very well, but in recent games they've been pretty comically inept, and this was a very Portsmouth thing to do.
Yeah, Simon
We've been
Cox.
Enjoying it.
Simon Cox scored a hat-trick to make it 3-3. BNE Shrimper says, I celebrated Simon Cox's hat-trick and equalising goal in the early hours of Sunday morning, my time in Queensland, Australia, so loudly it woke my wife up. Has anyone on the panel ever annoyed a loved one when celebrating a goal?
I can't think of it.
A friend of mine who's an Everton fan was once enjoying some special happy fun time with his girlfriend while on the sofa while there was a game in progress on a nearby television. And he interrupted said fun time to celebrate an Everton goal.
Do we know who scored it? Barry Horn? I can't remember. Daniel Amakachi?
It would have been in the early to mid-90s, so could well have been Barry Horn.
Are they
Horn.
Still together? I mean, was it?
No, they're not. I don't think that was the straw that broke the camel's back, but it was certainly one of them.
Just to say, Barry Horn was not a pun from me, but it really, should have been.
I thought it was. I was going to give it a round of applause.
Anyway, Sunderland came back from 2-0 down to Accrington Stanley to draw 2-2 at the Stadium Light. Great comeback, Baz. Well done.
Sunderland had drawn too many games. It's like quite a few teams don't want to leave League One. They like it so much. Portsmouth, their promotion charge is stalled. Sunderland hasn't really got going.
Portsmouth, they almost went out of business a few years ago. I mean, they'd be very happy that they'd be even anywhere near the top.
Just even
one.
Existing.
Just existing.
Do you think that's what the fans are like? Ah, it doesn't matter. We exist.
Well, I mean, when I went down there and I spoke to a lot of the fans when they got taken over, I mean, essentially they've been taken over by the former CEO of Disney. They've got, you know, quite a lot of money behind them. But they were, a lot of people were just grateful that they existed. You know, now obviously there's all sorts of expectations and now, maybe back in the Premier League. So
they feel Fratton Park, whatever division they're in.
That is true. The idea of someone from Disney coming in just makes me think they really should bring in... They could have some excellent mascots after a few years, couldn't they?
Oh, really? I mean, can you imagine?
Get all of them in.
Is Frozen Disney? Get Frozen in. That's for the kids. They love that, don't they?
It's true, yeah. I mean, I was going more sort of Mickey Mouse, but showing my age.
It's a new world out there. Yeah. It's a new world.
14 draws for Sunderland. You say that. I mean, instead of watching football, I went to watch Lego 2 last night. So
Was it good?
I mean, not as good as the first one because... No. The first one, you're like, oh, wow, this is much better than I thought it would be. But the second one's as good as you'd think it'd be. It's all about expectation.
Frozen 2's out in November, apparently.
This is the big news, isn't it? This is
why people come to this pod, that's for sure. In League 2, 4 draws in a row for leaders Lincoln. This time 2-2 at home to Stevenage. Bury are up to second after a 1-0 win at Exeter. Craig McHale-Smith scored the all-important goal in a 1-0 win for bottom side Notts County over third place Mansfield. They're now within 2 points of safety, Notts County. 12,000 there for that local derby. How old is Craig McHale-Smith? Barry?
35?
I think he's 34.
Faye is correct. 1 point to Faye.
He used to play for Luton.
Cambridge United, 0. Tranmere Rovers, 0. Barry, got any fit bar?
Bit of fit bar. Rangers drew 0-0 with St Johnson on Saturday, prompting another angry post-match, I wouldn't say rant, but you know, Steven Gerrard is quite forthright when it comes to throwing his players under the bus, but I suppose that's a game they would have expected to win. He said his team didn't stick to the game plan, but anyway, that draw meant that Celtic could go 8 points clear with a win over Kilmarnock, and they duly beat them, but left it very late. Scott Brown scored a late winner, and already on a yellow card, he went into the crowd to give it the full Messiah and promptly got a second yellow and was sent off. So, in that game, Kilmarnock striker Chris Boyd was warming up and was hit by a coin, and he posted a chippy Instagram message after the game saying that the Celtic fans, who were apparently the best fans in the world, had been calling him an orange bastard. And he could take that. He could take the banter, but throwing coins at him was unacceptable, which
pretty
is,
good.
It is.
Pretty clever banter, though.
Oh, very,
about it.
Very, very, very sophisticated wit. That was kind of it, really, fit bear wise.
Thank you very much, Barry. And that'll do for part two. Part three will begin in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's begin in Spain with Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, marvellous. Thanks very much. I wasn't expecting Girona to win at Real Madrid.
nor was anybody. I think last week I pointed out to you that there's this great phrase they use in Spain when it looks like the title race is back on. They say, there is league.
Yeah.
Well, this week I think everyone thinks there isn't league. Real Madrid, who'd won five in a row in La Liga, who had started to really kind of pick up speed and play quite well, of course, had won in the Champions League in midweek, up against a Girona team who hadn't won in 10 matches and were starting to slip right in towards the relegation zone. They went into the game 1 point above the relegation zone in 17th. And Girona were then also 1-0 down at half-time, a Casemiro goal. There's some nice footage, actually, of the tunnel before the second half, the Real Madrid players in the tunnel chatting to each other and joking and kind of giggling about, not necessarily about the game, but, you know, giggling about things, feeling very comfortable about how things were going. And then they got totally taken apart in the second half. It wasn't just that they were beaten 2-1 by Girona, it was that Girona completely deserved it. Missed two or three really, really good chances as well. Had a shot go over the bar from about 4 yards. Had another one come flying back off the post. In the end, Courtois goes up for a header, puts his header just wide, which I think would have been really, really unfair on Girona. And Girona, for them, it's a huge win. And obviously for everyone else, it's huge as well, because the sensation last night, and it might be premature to say this, but the sensation last night was that's it. It's done for Real Madrid. Their seventh defeat in the Liga.
Yeah, Girona the only team to take points at both the Bernabeu and the Nou Camp this season so far, which is quite impressive. And Sergio Ramos's 25th red card of his career, which is equally impressive.
It really is, isn't it? And Ramos, of course, who got a deliberate yellow card in midweek. And admitted it after the game and then came out the day after that and said, no, I meant that I deliberately did the foul, not that I deliberately got the card, because I was trying to stop the counter-attack. And it was very much Sergio Ramos has always been at war with Eurasia and has never been at war at Oceania and definitely hasn't happened before. And it, the kind of the North Korean twisting of his words was quite brilliant. But he then got sent off at the weekend. Yeah, the first one is for a handball, diving in to stop a shot that probably is going in. He gets a yellow card for that, not a red. And the second one, I must admit, I feel a bit sorry for him on the second one.
Yeah, I agree.
Second one's an overhead kick. And there's a bit of me that thinks if we're going to start giving yellow cards for overhead kicks for dangerous play, no one's ever going to do an overhead kick ever again.
But also, he didn't really catch the other fella, did he? The other fella went holding his head.
Exactly. The boot kind of flicks past just sort of below his chin. I don't think he caught him. I mean, if he had caught him, he might have sent his head flying into the back of the net. The way that this weekend was kind of shaping up, and because Barcelona weren't playing particularly well, because they'd drawn a couple of league games in a row, and of course had drawn with Madrid in the Copa del Rey Clásico first leg, it felt like the Clásico in 2 weeks' time in the league was going to be huge. And the reason for that was that everybody assumed that Real Madrid would win this game. They assumed that they would therefore be right behind Barcelona. I say right behind, you know, they would have been, 4 points behind Barcelona, I think. 7 points behind Barcelona would have been. Next weekend, Barcelona go away to Sevilla. Now, Sevilla are terrible away from home, but really, really good at Sancho Pizjuan. So then you say, well, if Barcelona lose that, and then Madrid win the Clásico, and suddenly it's only 1 point. So it really did feel like it was set up for it. Now, it feels like those two Clásicos back-to-back, because they're two Clásicos 3 days apart. One's the Copa del Rey semi-final and second leg, and one is the league one. It feels like the cup one is definitely the more decisive. You know, Barcelona can go into that. Whatever happens, they're going to come out of the Clásico top. Whatever happens now, they're going to come out of the Clásico with a reasonable lead, even if they were to lose the next two games. So it feels like it's lost some of its significance now.
Barca have got Lyon in the Champions League. I heard Philippe Auclair saying Barcelona might find this tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'll bow to Philippe in terms of how good Lyon are. I just don't know enough about Lyon to be able to judge that. But seen from a Barcelona perspective, this is a team that started to look a little tired. I mean, there was a really quite a big debate in Spain about whether or not they should effectively ditch the Copa del Rey. Now, for those who don't know, the Copa del Rey is completely compressed into January. In other words, it fills the whole of January up. You get back to the Champions League and you're exhausted because you've gone on this 5-week run of playing every 3 days. And there was a sense that maybe Barcelona should ditch it, or at the very least rotate very heavily in the cup. And they were doing that until the point at which they had to come back against Sevilla, which they did brilliantly. And then, of course, they get Real Madrid and you don't rotate in that scenario. And so they did look a little tired. This week they had a midweek off for the first time in 2019. So they were able to build up to the game against Valladolid, a game that in theory should have been comfortable. They only won 1-0 with a penalty. They didn't play particularly well. And they don't look physically that fresh. Now, obviously, there is a bit of this that you wonder if it's partly a mindset thing, that, you know, that the motivation will come back, the intensity will be there against Lyon, and they will produce their best performance. But they haven't looked great over the last month, even though they've largely continued getting the results that they need. And also, actually, if you go back over the last 3, maybe even 4 years, apart from that performance at Wembley against Spurs, where they were brilliant, away from home, they really haven't been very good at all in the Champions League.
And we all want Villarreal to stay up because we love Santi Cazorla, and they had a big win.
Massive, yeah. I mean, this is, and the bottom of the table has been, you know, the, I mean, at the moment, genuinely, you could take any three from 10 teams could go down. And there's been a lot of kind of very, very long runs. So as I said, Girona won the first time in after a 10-game run without a victory. Villarreal won as well after a 10-game run without a victory. This is huge for them because I think emotionally they're in a very, very bad place. I think this will give them a really, really big boost. They go away to Atletico next weekend. So in theory, they shouldn't win that, although Atletico play Juventus in midweek. And they've found a formula now which puts Cazorla in the middle of midfield. And this weekend, unlike the previous weekend where he was also there, it didn't feel like the rest of the team was a million miles away from him. So he could find people to pass to, he could find people to combine with. And if they can get this right, and I think importantly, emotionally, if they can kind of get that confidence back, then maybe they have a chance. They're only 1 point from safety now. But as I say, it really could be just about anyone from Eibar down.
You mentioned Atletico playing Juve. I should probably ask you how Atletico are shaping up for that one.
Good question, in so much as we don't really know. There was a sense of Atletico becoming Atletico again, strong, if not always particularly creative, a sense that they were kind of in control until the last couple of weeks. They were beaten 1-0 away at Betis. They were unfortunate in that they were denied a pretty clear penalty. Then they were beaten by Real Madrid, and although they were a little unfortunate perhaps in some of the refereeing decisions, there was no doubt that Madrid were the better side, and they admitted that. And then this weekend they went away to Rayo Vallecano, a team fighting against relegation, and they won 1-0 with a pretty scrappy goal and didn't play that well. Costa's back, which obviously makes a difference. And the focus, emotionally at least, has been on the Champions League, because of course they host the final. But it's up against Juventus. And to be the sensation right now is that Atletico aren't in a great moment. They've had a lot of injuries. And I must admit, I think the suspicion from most people in Spain is that they might not get through this round.
Sid, thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
From Spain, we'll go to Germany, where Archie Rintut reports on the Bundesliga from Lukas Podolski's kebab shop.
Greetings from Cologne. This week, going to steer things towards the Champions League and a little bit on Claudio Pizarro. Firstly, let's start with how Bayern warmed up for their game at Anfield. League leaders Borussia Dortmund taking a Monday night trip to bottom club Nuremberg. So, Bayern went to Augsburg on Friday night and closed the gap at the top to 2 points. A 3-2 win, which once again included a fair few shaky moments for Bayern at the back. They were even behind after just 13 seconds, Bayern's Leon Goretzka scoring the quickest own goal in Bundesliga history. It showed, though, how important winger Kingsley Coman is to the champions' fortunes. He scored twice, evading a certain Reece Oxford at the back post for his first, yet he went off. Again, an injury to his left ankle, already been operated on twice, but injury not quite as serious as first feared. It's touch and go whether he'll make the Liverpool game. To write off Bayern completely would be daft, but this side isn't quite what it used to be, particularly defensively. Niklas Süle, but more so Mats Hummels, are not the quickest centre-back pairing, something to be exploited there by Liverpool. Schalke, though, are in a far worse state before hosting Manchester City, 14th in the Bundesliga. They had a 0-0 draw at home to Freiburg on Saturday, had Suat Serdar sent off in the first half. Real struggle to create much going forward, as has been their problem all season. Big players like Leon Goretzka and Thilo Kehrer left in the summer. Schalke have struggled to replace them despite laying out over €50 million. The most expensive of those new signings, midfielder Sebastian Rudi, has not really been integrated into the side by coach Domenico Tedesco. The football they played last season lent itself to attrition, but was successful. This season, the success has gone, and hopes ahead of the City game are not high. But let us end on a high note. Werder Bremen's Claudio Pizarro, who at 40 years of age became the oldest goalscorer in Bundesliga history. Unlike Pizarro himself, the goal was not pretty. A deflected free kick, but it was a 96th-minute equaliser away at Hertha Berlin in a 1-1 draw.
Thank you, Archie. In France, second place Lille shared a goalless draw with Montpellier. So that meant PSG went 12 points clear, two games in hand as well. They beat Saint-Etienne 1-0 last night, Kylian Mbappe with his 19th league goal of the season. Lyon prepared for their Champions League game against Barcelona with a 2-1 win over Guingamp. And Monaco picked up their fifth win of the season. They beat Nantes 1-0. From France to Italy, here's Paolo Bandini.
An eventful week, I would say, in Italy. We'll start with Inter, who stripped Mauro Icardi of the captaincy in midweek after his wife and agent, Wanda Nara, was critical of teammates during one of her regular appearances on the TV talk show Tiki Taka. Icardi skipped the Europa League visit to Rapid Vienna after being stripped of the captaincy. Inter won without him, and they won again this weekend against Sampdoria without him. And interestingly, two of the players who were most prominent in this, Radja Nainggolan, who scored the winner, and Ivan Perisic, who set up the first of their two goals, both also players have been criticised for failing to show leadership and take responsibility in this season. So to a great extent, Inter have sort of come out well from this decision. It seems like they've got a reaction from the rest of the squad. They insist they're still going to offer Icardi a new contract. Pepe Marotta, the CEO on the sporting side, obviously came over from Juventus, called into that same TV show, Tiki Taka, where Wanda was putting in another appearance on Sunday night, and said that there will be an offer on the table shortly. But the negotiating position can only be strengthened by this win, because it's actually the first time in 10 games that Inter have scored more than one goal, which you might think surprising, given they were without their top scorer. Good result for them, certainly, and keeps them on track for the top four. The goals are flowing even more freely for Milan, for whom Krzysztof Piątek scored twice in a big win away to Atalanta. He has now scored 6 goals in 5 appearances since joining in January, so it's safe to say nobody there is missing Gonzalo Higuain. Still, the craziest scenes in Serie A this weekend, to keep moving on, took place at the Stadio Paolo Mazza, where relegation-threatened Spal thought they'd taken a 2-1 lead at home to Fiorentina inside the last 15 minutes, only for their goal to be cancelled out by a VAR review, which also gave a penalty at the other end. It was a correct decision. Chiesa had been fouled inside the box at the far end right before Spal broke away and scored. And the referee, Luca Barreto, even followed the correct VAR guidelines by allowing play to continue until a natural stoppage, and also by erring on the side of caution with the initial decision, not blowing his whistle prematurely for the penalty and allowing VAR to get to the right outcome. But of course, Spal were thrown for a loop. As I say, they're fighting against relegation this season, and they wound up losing 4-1, lost their heads in the end of the game. And President Walter Mattioli protested that they cannot be treated like this. So, VAR controversy in the top flight. But if you thought that was the biggest footballing controversy in Italy this weekend, you'd be wrong, because third tier Pro Piacenza lost 20-0 in their game against Cuneo. The team had only scored 18 goals all season previously, after they fielded a team of 7 players. 6 of those were teenagers, and the other was a 39-year-old team masseur who was thrown in at the last second because the original 7th player, another teenager, didn't show up with the right registration documents to play. To give a bit of context here, Pro Piacenza had forfeited their previous 3 games due to a lack of players. They have a lack of players because the club is in dire financial straits and haven't paid their players since August. They would have been thrown out of the league if they'd forfeited a 4th game. So this was a tenuous solution they came up with, but as you can imagine, not one that has gone down well with the footballing authorities. The Italian Football Federation president, Gabriele Gravina, called it an insult to sport and its founding principles.
Thank you very much, Paolo. Yes, you mentioned it earlier in the pod, James, that 20-0 defeat for Serie C's bottom club, Pro Piacenza.
Yeah. Occasionally you do come across stories like this in European football. I remember in Romania a couple of years ago, I was looking, as you do, perusing the Romanian second division league table.
Right.
And the bottom club, it wasn't even Christmas, and they had like a minus 100 goal difference. And it was the same thing. It was, they'd gone out of business, so everybody had left the club. So it was like a ghost club, but all was left was like a couple of teenagers that were kind of still turning up and getting hammered week in, week out. And so now, I mean, this has gone quite viral, this story. And I was thinking, I'm not sure if this is true, but if you're registered as a player 24 hours before the game, right, you can play. So I bet the phone is off the hook with any man and his dog who wants to play this weekend.
But
or
you
next
sort
weekend.
Of think, right? If you can get 7, you can get 11.
Yeah.
Well, if I have 3 dropouts on a Saturday morning, I can get 14. I can still find them from somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I think you might have to be registered. That might be the problem. Or put a bollard there in goal or something.
Are you suggesting I play ringers?
No, I wouldn't make a suggestion like that. But it would be. I don't know, if I had any kind of ability on the football pitch whatsoever, which I don't, I would be making my way to Italy this weekend and trying to get a game somewhere.
Someone called Defendi scored 5, which was ironic. So Liverpool, Bayern Munich. I've been wondering, Faye, how much Liverpool care about the Champions League this season. Given,
really?
Well,
they've been awful, really. Group stage, they were terrible. I watched them lose to Red Star Belgrade, and they were taken apart by a you know, the equivalent of kind of Emil Heskey playing up front for, you know, for Red Star. They looked terrible.
Yeah, they did. They played well, didn't they? PSG at home, yeah. they played very well. I mean, I'm just thinking, given how important it is for Liverpool to win the Premier League and how Jurgen Klopp's teams do suffer when they play more matches, it wouldn't be a disaster for them to go out against Bayern Munich. That's not to say European night at Anfield, it's going to be hard not to, if you happen to be picked, you'll probably try your hardest.
I know exactly what you mean. And because they got to the final last year, it kind of buys them a bit of Champions League time, if you like. And yes, they want the Premier League so desperately. But as you say, I don't think they're going to turn up against Bayern Munich and put in a half-hearted performance.
Barry?
Well, Liverpool have just sort of coming out of basically their second winter break because they got knocked out of the cup by Wolves in the third round. So the last time they had a 10-day break, they came back and were a bit rusty, drew two games against Leicester and West Ham. They've just had another 10-day break. Virgil van Dijk suspended. He's a big loss for that game. But their European record at Anfield is 19 unbeaten. So it's a very hard one to call.
And Bayern aren't quite the team of the past few years. I mean, they're not exactly running away with it. But Dortmund's still top, right?
Yeah.
I didn't check this morning. My bad.
Yeah.
So you'd think they should be able to do the business at home.
Manchester City go to Schalke. We're not expecting any of all the fixtures in this knockout stage. That seems the most one-sided, but I could be proved wrong, couldn't I? Mark says, what does James see being the end game for Ukrainian football? I mean, I don't know how briefly you can do this. This is quite a deep question. It seems that the country's going to fall through the cracks created by the conflict, both in Crimea and afterwards. Could we see an East-West Germany situation?
Well, we already have a situation. Well, I don't think it'll be East-West in the same way. The country won't be divided. You can see where Donetsk is, the People's Republic of Donetsk, these kind of republics that have been set up, might be carved away and given some level of independence. But I don't think we'll see a separate country with a separate capital, national team and league. Crimea already has a league that's kind of recognised by UEFA, but it's not Russian and it's not Ukrainian and it can't compete in UEFA in European competition. So that's probably what will happen. And that means basically the clubs will die away.
Producer Jonathan has written Krakow Derby. Tell me more.
Oh, well, this is... I wrote a story this weekend for the New York Times about Jakub Wojciechowski. Kuba, I mean, yeah. You know, Dortmund legend. And he has returned to Wisła Krakow to play for free. And he has lent the club £250,000.
Yes, I remember.
Pounds. Because the club had gone out of business. Essentially, the club was taken over by, or controlled by, a group of hooligans, effectively. And then it was sold to a mysterious Cambodian businessman who then disappeared. And so they were completely broke, lost their license. And then here comes Kuba, who made his name at Wisła Krakow. He's from the village nearby. And he's decided to basically... the Polish FA wouldn't allow him to play for free. So he gets 500 zloty a month, which is about $100, which he's donating to a children's home. So basically, Kuba is this kind of hero who's just returning to Wisła Krakow, they're not doing too badly. I think they're 8th or 9th in the league at the moment, even though they're completely skinned. None of the players got paid for 6 months. Kuba's turned up, paid their wages. And so next season, they've lost most of the team now, of course. They lost kind of 8 or 9 players in the transfer window. But they're playing tonight. So this is home debut. So it should be quite a warm welcome.
That's a brilliant story.
He's not that old,
is he? He's not that old. He's 33. But the type of player he is, you know, again, I mean, maybe he's just played so many minutes like Rooney and like Alexis Sanchez. But you'd have thought he would have had another... He was at Wolfsburg. It wasn't going very well for him. But he could have probably got a contract to another German team, probably could have got Premier League team interested in him. There'd be plenty of interest, you'd think. But he wanted to go back to Wisła and they needed him and they needed his money because if he hadn't have come in with the money that he paid, that club would not got their playing licence and they wouldn't be playing in the second half of the season.
Into the Isthmian Premier at 4:50 p.m. on Folkestone Invicta's Twitter. Penalty to Invicta, 4:51. Goal. Folkestone Invicta 1, Wingate and Finchley 0, Draycott 90 minutes, penalty, 4:55. Goal, Folkestone Invicta 2, Wingate and Finchley 0, Youssef 90 minutes. Moving on to Wingate and Finchley's Twitter. 4:56, goal. Anthony Mendy pulls one back for us, curling home 1-1. His first for the club. 2-1 down. 4:57, it's 2-2. Capital letters this. Mendy, Cronin flicks on Edie's cross and the new man slams home an equaliser. One reply to the tweets from Deepak just saying, both teams snatching a draw from the jaws of a draw. what a great bit of injury time there in the Isthmian.
I'm going to steal that line. That's a great line.
It's a great line, isn't it? Some feedback from the last pod from the Corporal says, I'm amazed that Max only made quick mention of Isaac Hayes resurrecting himself to score Newcastle's opener. Remarkable transition from soul man to goal man. And that'll do for today. James, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Faye.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Baz.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.